Hi, this is Tom Winifred with the regular Bearcast on the 12th of September. What do you think of the headline? Pretty good, eh? Boom, boom. The dirty jokes are always the best. I'm not sure that the missus will approve. As you know, she thought my headline about how shareholders in BNN were going to take it up the arsenal was a bit crude and vaguely homophobic. No doubt she won't approve of this headline either. The subject of premature ejaculation is one, of course, that I have said before. I have no first-hand experience of. I can't see what all the fuss is about, but apparently it is a big problem. Anyhow, I've always been interested in this because my old friend Jim Mellon has control of a company called Regent Pacific, which bought out Plethora to stop it going bust, another company which Jim was involved in, all very related party and hands-on and all that sort of thing. And it's hoping to launch its product, Fortressin, which is a spray to stop premature ejaculation in Europe in 2018. Now, the bad news is it looks like it has a rival, and a rival which, unlike Regent Pacific and before it Plethora, looks to be pretty competent. That rival is Innovaderma, which is London-listed but Australia, and it's got a product called Prolong, which is apparently for better sex, and it's a vibrator, and apparently it can help those who have this particular problem last 11 times longer in bed. Anyhow, it's going to be launched in Europe next year. Innovaderma is a company which is on the verge of profitability thanks to its skinny tan product. Again, not something that I have personally got any experience of. But it's going to be launching the Prolong vibrator next year. It's already been cleared by the FDA for a USA launch this year. Be a push into Australia this year and the UK and Europe in 2018. Just strikes me. I'm still not convinced that the size of this market, size doesn't matter. Well, of course it does matter in this particular context. But we shall see how it goes. But the key point is that there are clearly many approaches to this particular problem. Whoever suggests that any of them is going to get a dominant market share, I think is kidding themselves. There are going to be many players. Anyhow, all to play for. Regent Pacific, I think, has shares have peaked, perked up a bit. They're now 35 cents, still way down on the level at which the Plethora deal was done because there's been 10-for-1 consolidation. So folks who thought that deal was done at 12.5 cents have lost quite a lot of money. But I think its big issue is cash rather than the success of its launch. Time will tell. Now, on the subject of things out east, my Square shares are a little bit weaker today. You may have read my article yesterday about the curse of Quindell and evil Victoria Gagan of Bell Pottinger, the PR firm, which has had a few problems in South Africa with stirring up the old race hatred and is going into administration. Vicky was the PR person who orchestrated some of Quindell's smear campaigns and harassments of journalists, notably me, the curse. And she was also responsible for the problems in South Africa. Anyhow, the curse of Quindell has seen for Bell Pottinger. My point about that was that there was a culture at Bell Pottinger where anything goes. You pay Bell Pottinger a retainer and they would do more or less anything. Smear a journalist, oh, no problem at all. Encourage the company to harass journalists with fatuous lawyers' letters and fascist lawyers' letters, no problem at all. Stir up a bit of race hatred in South Africa, no problem at all. It's a culture of mendacity and wickedness which pervaded the firm of Bell Pottinger. Why do I mention this? Because one of the co-founders of that firm, Piers Pottinger, is attempting to lead a management buyout of the Asian businesses. Piers is based out east these days. And you'll never guess, he's involved with a name-listed company, MySquared. MySquared, he is the chairman of. I have flagged up before that statements made by MySquared and by its CEO, Eric Shire, whose own business past is littered in controversy and wrongdoing, just don't stack up. The valuation is ludicrous for a company which I very much doubt is ever going to generate free cash if you take out the dodgy related party deals. And now I suspect it will be the subject of more scrutiny thanks to its link with Mr. Pottinger. Lucien Myers wrote the other day that compared to BNN, MySquared made BNN look like a blue chip. BNN, of course, is a China fraud whose CEO and chief operating officer have been suspended pending serious allegations and whose shares will never see the light of day. I would agree. BNN is indeed a blue chip compared to MySquared, and it is only a matter of time before that one completely collapses. I suspect it will be all of a bit of a rush and sudden thing. The shares will meander along, being ramped by poltroons on bulletin boards and promoted by unscrupulous city promoters and brokers. Meander along, they may go up a bit, they may go down a bit. I suspect it's going to be more down than the up. And then suddenly there will be a big admission of something horrible and there will be a collapse. Rooney, it is only a matter of when, not if. I'm intrigued by events at Avanti Communications. You will remember that its founder and CEO, the most bombastic prick in the whole of the Western world, Mr. David Williams, the uber Welsh king of the bombast, quit very, very suddenly in August. That is a bad sign, you know. I know the company's tried to sort of, brush over it and thanked David for his invaluable contributions in making the company what it is today. That is to say, completely and utterly drowning in debt with its debt rated at sub-junk status. The company tried to put the best spin on it, but it is very bad news when someone like that leads. Mr. Williams was... Well, he was Avanti. He was the man who fronted up all the city presentations. He was the man who would be the contact on the press releases. He was the man who was quoted in the press. He was the man who got the firm to pay for a PR agency to play stories about what a wonderful chap he was. He was Mr. Avanti. His departure should surely be alarming. What is intriguing today is that the company has announced that it's got has appointed Mr. Nigel Fox to the board. Mr. Fox is the chief financial officer. He was on the board until January of this year, at which point he stepped down from the board. Now he's gone back on the board. It's all very confusing and I put it to you rather disconcerting. Anyhow, it's also a bit of a distraction. The bottom line is Avanti is completely drowning in debt. And it is not generating free cash flow. So the borrowings are going to go up and up. It misses every single target it ever sets. The macro headwinds are very, very bad. I'll come to that in a second. But in this case, it's the fact that the amount you can get for renting out capacity on satellites is just falling through the floor. It has been for a while and it continues to do it. There is a clear overcapacity. Avanti's answer to this is to launch more satellites, which is insanity. If the medicine isn't working, just take more of it. But it might kill the patient. I don't care. Take more of it anyway. It's bonkers. That's Avanti's problem. It's fundamentally its business model is screwed and it's drowning in debt, which in the end it won't be able to service, let alone repay. And that makes its equity totally worthless. You know, when your debt is rated as sub-junk, that tells you the equity is just completely worthless. Yet, Avanti shares still trade at around 9p. That would be about 99% lower than when the king of the bombast, the prick Williams, sold vast numbers a few years ago. And the shares are worthless. Anyhow, it's a bit of a distraction, but what's going on at the management at the boardroom level is quite interesting, isn't it? Away from that, I notice events going on at a company which you will remember as the Hotel Corporation. Back, it was about a year ago, wasn't it, that there was an attempt by Marcus Yeoman, who I should say is a friend of mine, to wrest control of this AIM-listed vehicle. His argument was that it was incredibly closely connected to Shore Capital, who had absolutely gouged the vehicle with fees for failed venture after failed venture after failed venture. And what Marcus wanted to do was get control himself and set the company up on a new direction. The board and Shore Capital ensured that didn't happen, defeating Marcus at an AGM, promising shareholders a bright future. Well, that was their promise. Unfortunately, they have shown their true colours now, and that is that the company changed its name, and I think people just forgot about what was going on. It has certainly fallen off my radar screen. And yesterday it announced that it's proposing to cancel the trading on AIM. It has invested the money. It's changed its name to Specialist Investment Properties. The EPIC is SIPP. It has invested the cash which it had not handed over to Shore Capital for vast fees or paid to the directors for vast fees for failure. It's invested that in three kiddies nurseries. It's got no money left. It can't afford the AIM fees and therefore it's going to delist. It will then seek to sell those properties and what is left after costs will be returned to lucky shareholders. Well, what's not to like? This is scandalous. The role of Shore Capital, the role of the directors in agreeing to this, the directors must have known that if they invested all the three money in three illiquid properties not generating much in the way of rental yield, that the company would have no money left to continue its AIM existence. Yet they signed up for it anyway. Why? Because they were paid lots of money to sign up for it. It is a total and utter disgrace. It makes you think again, who benefits from AIM? Well, who's benefited from here? Shore Capital has made a killing from fees since this company was launched. The directors have trousered it in for doing, frankly, an appalling job and not really doing very much. When shareholders complain, the directors promise changes to corporate governance and that there's a bright new future. And then you see the reality. It's another day of shame for AIM. It's a day of shame for Shore Capital, not the first in its history. And it's a day of abject shame for the directors. I hope that the fat cat bastards who sat on this board, residents in tax havens around the British Isles, I hope that they never sit on any board ever again. They are more gentlemen who are not fit to run the public lavatory at Athens bus station. No doubt Shore Capital will look after them with new sinecures. I know that when I last commented on 88 Energy, I got a bit of stick from people who suggested that I didn't know what I was talking about. Well, I think I do, you know. My point is not that 88 Energy doesn't have the potential to find a lot of oil in Alaska. Clearly it does. It's got vast acreage. And Alaska has clearly got very large oil reserves. With Donald Trump in charge, they are not going to worry about destroying a bit of habitat which might contain the lesser spotted Arctic white snail. It's full steam ahead on making America energy self-sufficient while oil in the ground has any value at all. My point is that none of the reserves were proved. It hadn't drilled up to show that it had a commercial resource, yet it had a huge valuation. Today, we have had an announcement from 88 Energy with the latest drilling results from the Icewine well. And they're not terribly good. Now, no doubt I will be told by the fucktards who own this stock and clearly know better that I don't know what I'm talking about. But I would read the words minor hydrocarbon indications via flow rate of 2 to 4 MCF of gas per day with a maximum rate of 8 MCF per gas per day is pretty bad. It shows there's a bit of gas there, but hardly enough to indicate that the prospect is commercial. Now, of course, they're going to carry on drilling. They may get greater gas flows at depth, you don't know. But so far, the flow test of this is distinctly unimpressive. There is thus no evidence that this is a commercial prospect. That evidence may emerge, but at the moment there isn't. The problem is that the shares, which are down on when I commented on them last at 1.85p, still value this company at around 90 million quid. Now, that's an awful lot of money for a company which have to admit, in a few weeks' time, that this well is not commercial. There is a bigger issue, and that is that this company is clearly running out of cash at an alarming rate. Running flow tests on a well in the middle of fucking nowhere in Alaska is bloody expensive. There are, of course, also the bloated PLC costs, but it's running things out in the middle of nowhere is very, very, very expensive. And the company's running out of cash. I noted before that it's an absolute slam dunk cert that 88 Energy is going to have to raise money before Christmas. The problem it's got is if it was raising money with the share price driven either by good results or by hope and ramping by ignorant fucktards on the bulletin boards, well, that would perhaps be not such a difficult exercise. But this company needs to raise material amounts of money. And if the results that keep on coming out are disappointing, as these ones clearly are, then it's not going to be a virtuous circle of trying to raise money into a rising and grossly inflated share price. It's going to be a vicious circle of knowing it's got to raise money, knowing that no sane individual is going to put money in unless they pay at a big discount, and the share price is falling because the news from the North Slope of Alaska is not exactly positive. That is the problem for 88 Energy. Now, I suggest it's possible the company will discover something and the shares are cheap. But on the basis of what we know now, the shares are fundamentally expensive. The risks are, well, the risks on the upside are that, yes, it discovers something big, but a 90 million market cap for a company which is years away from production already discounts some sort of success. It doesn't discount any possibility of disappointment, and it doesn't discount the complete inevitability of a hugely discounted and very large placing happening within the next few months. And that is why I remain bearish. Q comments from lots of morons who've never worked as an oil analyst saying, I don't know what I'm talking about. I await your comments with interest. And away from that, there was another episode in the sad tale that is AIM yesterday, which was worthy of comment. Shares in a company called Zibao Minerals, which is a Chinese metal trading operation based in Hong Kong, went through the roof. The company was forced to put out a trading statement, and today the shares have come back a little bit. People got terribly excited about the trading statement. The trading statement was a relatively mixed one. But you need to put it in the context not only of what was said yesterday, but of the most recent set of results. The market cap of Zibao, as it is now, at 2.63p today, is a couple of million quid, £2.6 million. The statement yesterday was a statement raise share price movement. You get these big share price movements from illiquid, shitty little stocks at the bottom of AIM. It said that the results for the year 31st of March should be published shortly. These will show a substantial increase in turnover. Sales are vanity. That's not their statement, that's mine. But there's a substantial increase in turnover, which has been offset by falling margins. Overall, there has been an increase in profits, the results of cuts in overheads, albeit somewhat offset by an overall reduction in gross profits. Trading conditions remain weak. The strength of the balance sheet has allowed the company to invest more extensively in working capital, which has been a key factor in the growth of sales and the maintenance of profits. Well, it sounds to me like profits aren't going to be that much up on the prior year, but it also sounds like the market is incredibly weak. And that it means that the overall trend in terms of gross profitability is going to be down. Now, what's intriguing is if you look back to the previous announcement by the company, it's rather tardy for such a small company in announcing its full year results. Back in December, we got the half year results for the period to the end of 6th of September. Revenue was up by 145%. So we know that revenue is up by a lot, but this is all in Hong Kong dollars. Revenue was up to 39 million Hong Kong dollars. So call that 3.9 million quid, roughly speaking. But cost of sales was 38 million. So the gross profit for the half year was just 425, was effectively not a lot. 4.255 million Hong Kong dollars. But then administrative expenses kicked in at 3.7 million Hong Kong dollars, meaning the operating profit was just 500,000 Hong Kong dollars. That's 50,000 quid. 50,000 quid. Now, going to the balance sheet, we're told that's profit. What's intriguing is if you go to the cash flow statement, you'll see that actually, whilst reporting a profit, it managed to burn its way through 6 million Hong Kong dollars, call it 600,000 quid's worth of cash. Profit is a matter of opinion. Cash flow and cash is a matter of fact. Well, that doesn't read too well. So what do we look for in the balance sheet? We're told that it's strong. Well, up to a point, the company has got total assets of 87 million Hong Kong dollars, call that 8.7 million quid. But a lot of that comes from inventories, 32 million Hong Kong dollars, and trade receivables. I'd always be rather suspicious about inventories. How quickly can they be turned into cash? There were, of course, the usual trade payables, corporate tax payable, accrued liabilities, etc. So there's 23 million of liabilities. So we're talking about 6.5 million net assets. But if you take out the inventories or discount them back, that number starts to go down pretty significantly. What is interesting is the cash position at the half-year stage. The cash position was just 870,000 Hong Kong dollars, call it 87 grand. That's pretty low to me. It doesn't suggest a strong balance sheet. And moreover, it's not a lot more than 6 months' cash burn. That is a significant worry to me. Zibao's capitalized at 2.6 million. If it made 50 grand profit, we'll use the profit figure, although I'd rather think about cash, at the half year stage. If the second half is marginally better, it strikes me it's on a massive multiple of earnings. For a company with such appalling visibility of sales, which is clearly subscale, which is run by out of Hong Kong by largely Chinese board. And the history of China stocks on AIM isn't that good, let's face it. I'm sure that Wenji Zhou Zhu, Jianfeng Eddie Li, and Chua Wei Alan Ong are all fine gentlemen. But I'm afraid they're tarred by the brush of many other Chinese stocks on AIM. Trading is a one-off business. It should always be on a low. Any trading business should be on a low multiple of profits. This one's on an exceptionally high multiple of profits. There are so many red flags here. You really don't want to get involved. It strikes me this is just another spivvy little stock at the bottom end of AIM, which is probably being ramped by some sordid bloke in his council house on Twitter. But there is no fundamental justification either for the share price movement yesterday or for the current valuation. I hope you've enjoyed this bearcast, wide-ranging as ever. Remember, there'll be a bearcast tomorrow, which you can all listen to, and I hope you enjoy that too. Come Thursday, you will only be able to listen to Bearcast if you pay a subscription to Share Profits. 6 quid, and for that you get, on average, 30 Bearcasts a month. 6 quid for a month, and 30 Bearcasts, plus 270 other articles. What a bargain! Sign up now, follow the simple instructions which the Pizza Hard man laid out in the article at the top of this page, and get signed up. And I will be back tomorrow with another Bearcast, and I'll speak to you then.